All right, good morning, everybody. Now that we sounded that shiphorn, let's get started. So we have quite a few of people in on the stage. So this is not really an introduction to BizTalk. That the title is deceiving. It is a pretty deep dive into BizTalk. It's a developer session. So we are not just talking about BizTalk on the surface. We are talking about the newer functionalities of BizTalk. So we'll be focusing on very few of the new functionalities of the many new improvements that are done in BizTalk Server. So we'll start off with what's new in BizTalk 2013 with a few powerful pillars, which is connecting to the cloud and improved performance and simplified experience. So then, couple of new adapters that we have included with BizTalk Server 2013, which enables you to connect to the cloud through the latest web HTTP protocols, which is REST interfaces. And we also have significant improvement in performance, which we'll be showing off in terms of comparison with 2010 and also in terms of specific scenarios, which we are doing in the lab as we speak. And we will also be covering some simplified experience with ability to connect to Office 365 and improvements in terms of ESB. And we also have a partner on stage who will show about how that they are able to extend the capabilities of BizTalk platform. In that, we will go into quite a lot of demos, and we'll keep Q&A to the end of the session for most part of it, because these are pretty intense demos, and there will be questions, and we will, as far as possible, let's try to keep it to the end, and we all will be available until the end of the day if you want, and we can talk a lot about this, but for the purpose of this session, let us try to keep the Q&As to the end, because we are really, really packed on time. So without much ado, let's get into the demos. All right. So Rajesh will be presenting initially a demo on REST adapter. And we'll be talking about how to use REST, and it is not about what is REST, it is not about why REST, it is about how to use it in BizTalk Server. Right? Thanks, Rajesh.
All right. So let's get started. So for the purpose of this demo, what we are going to do is we are going to first consume REST services, and then we are going to expose REST services. Now, when you generally talk about REST services, they expose a whole set of operations. For example, it's not only about getting data, but also we want to update records, delete records, etc. Now, the demo is centered around how you can connect to Windows Azure Storage. So typically, when you take a storage account, you have multiple containers. These are like placeholders where you can place the data. And I'm going to take this BTS Ticket demo storage. And each of these containers, they have different files. And in these files, you can perform various operations. For example, you can create a file, you can delete a file, you can update a file, etc. We'll see how we can do each of these operations, the CRUD operations, like list the containers, list the files in a specific container, create a new file, delete a file, etc., using the new REST capabilities. So through that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch over to BizTalk Server machine. Install the BizTalk Server machine. Go here. And I'm going to create a new application. And this is the application where we're going to do the demo. I'm going to say BTS 2013. That's it. Let me switch over to Visual Studio. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to create messages and make the invocations dynamically. So I'm going to go ahead and create a new BizTalk project, and I'm going to say name it as BTS 2013 demo. Here I'm going to do a few simple things. First, I'm going to create a new schema and call it as BTS. So this is the Visual Studio Schema extensions, where you can go and order author schemas. I'm going to call it as input message, and I'm going to contain three different elements. One, I'm going to call it as the container name. So this is going to specify which container you want to connect to. And then you're going to create a file name. and this is going to specify which specific file you want to access. And then finally, you want to get the operation you want to invoke. And we're going to see it in action in terms of what all operations we're going to invoke. So I'm going to, let me name it as operation name. These could be things like list the containers, list the blobs, get the blob ID, or create a blob, or delete a blob. You're going to make a series of operations. And now, for this to be accessible dynamically, it should be there in the message context. And the way you get it in the message context is you promote properties. So I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to create a new property schema. In this case, you can go here. Let me name it as BTS 2030. Demo. With this set, I'm going to have a couple of properties. Name it as container name. And then the second one, I'm going to name it as file name. So now I need to make sure that whatever data I get in the schema is present at the runtime context. So I'm going to go ahead and say promote these properties. So I'm going to say go to the property fields. I'm going to select the property schema. And also, one other thing which you'll notice is when you want to set the operations you want to do, we typically have a BizTalk property schema called BTS file system. So I'm going to go ahead and say refer to the schemas and go to the references and select global property schemas. And then there is BTS underscore system properties. Now, the container name, I'm just going to map it to the default container names of the property schema. And the thing with respect to operation name is it's interesting because you need to tell BizTalk which operation to invoke. So in this case, I'm just going to set it as ns1.operation. So here you go. And that's all the code you have to do. You're just creating a schema. And again, to set some more context, it will become a lot more clear when you go into the demos as to why we are doing this. The reason we are doing in this particular demo is to make sure that whatever data we are sending, we are able to make invocations dynamically. So I'm going to start one thing at a time. So let me go ahead and deploy this particular project. So I'm going to go to properties, make sure that it's fully signed assembly. I'll just go ahead and say new, and name it as BTS 2013 demo. Now it's signed, I'm going to say that I've already created a BizTalk project called BTS 2013 demo. Let me build this. And then let me go ahead and deploy this. So the deploy is started. It's now completed. So let's go to the BizTalk admin console. Make sure that the schema which we just deployed, so VTS 2013 demo. Oh, this one, okay. All right, so no wonder. So let me go to the admin console. It should have gone to the BizTalk application. Yes, yeah. Move to application. BTS 2013 demo. All right. So now you see it reflected here. Now, what I want to do as part of the demo is make REST API calls. In this case, I'm going to go and connect to Azure Storage. So I'm going to make a REST API call. To invoke the REST API call, you need a trigger. But the way you invoke REST APIs is through a new adapter, which we have introduced in BizTalk Server 2013 called Web HTTP Adapter. So let's go ahead and see how we can use this. I'm just going to create a two-way send port because I'm going to send the data and then get some response back. So I'm going to say send port send to Azure. As part of the adapter, I'm going to select WCF Web HTTP adapter and then configure it. And when you want to talk to REST endpoints, you typically have a base address and then you have a list of operations which are present beneath that base address. To see what is the base address for Azure Storage, let's quickly switch over to the Azure Storage REST API. And this is the API which is documented in MSDN. So we have to make sure that if you want to get the list of containers, what is the operation you want to invoke. So I'm just going to copy this. Go to this machine, create a notepad. So thing you'll see here is there are certain things which are placeholders. In my case, the name of my storage account is BTS Tech at Demo Storage. This is the account which I want to connect to. So I'll go ahead and specify that. And then I'm just going to get the list of containers in this particular account. So I'm going to go ahead and select this particular value and specify that as my base address endpoint. And here you'll see a few interesting things. Here, if you read through the text, it specifies something called as HTTP method and HTTP URL mapping. And the reason it's important is, let's say you want to invoke multiple operations, like what we are going to do now, get files, delete files, create files, etc. You can invoke multiple operations in the same context. So I'm just going to say BTS HTTP URL mapping. And then go ahead and say the first operation which I want to invoke. Since we can't see all of this in the text box, let me go ahead and put it in the same notepad so that it's much more legible. So I'm going to say this here and then say the operation. And again, the syntax is similar to the one which is present in the text. So you have to specify the operation name, the method you have to invoke, and the relative URI. So I'm going to go ahead and say the operation name is, let me keep it here. So it's, I'm just going to say it's list containers. And the method you want to invoke. So in this case, you're going to do a get operation to get the list of containers. And the URI you're going to create is the one which is present here, / comp list. So that's it. So now we are going to specify this intent, which is I'm going to get the list of containers. So that configuration is complete. So let's go ahead and complete the rest other aspects. In this case, we are sending data over HTTPS. So we're going to select that security mode as transport. And when you talk to Azure Storage, it has its own authentication. It has its own storage name and credentials. And with Bistock Server 2013, we provide behavior out of the box to connect to Azure Storage. You don't have to write it yourself. So I'm going to just select the Azure Storage behavior. And all it asks is the Azure Storage name, which will again copy from the main screen and then give it here. And each storage account in Azure has its own access key. So in this case, I'm going to go ahead and select its access key, go back to Bistock, and provide its credentials. And the final part which is interesting about REST is, so far we have said what is the endpoint you have to invoke, what is the operation you're going to perform. In this case, you're going to get the list of containers, how we are going to authenticate. We gave the Azure Storage behavior. And the final part is, typically when you send a get message, you don't have any message payload. You're just going to say, get me the list of containers. You're not going to pass any message body. So how do you make sure that you don't pass any message body? You can truncate the message yourself. You can write a custom pipeline component. But what we have done in Bistock Server 2013 is that we identify there are a few key REST methods, like get, delete, et cetera, where you don't have to pass message body. So I'm just going to say for all my get methods, truncate the message body. I don't have to write a custom pipeline component. So I'm just going to call out a supply. And so I think I made a mistake in the HTTP method URL mapping. Operation name with containers. Method equal to get. Copy this. All right, so that is done. Now we have to make sure that we have the corresponding stubs. So what I'll do quickly is I've created some receive locations where you can go and post the data. So I'll go here. Leave the default values as is, and say that I'm going to receive a file, which will in turn trigger the REST API call. So here I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, oh, where did I save? Okay, keep saving it to this track application one. I don't know why. So we have it here, and then I'm going to create one more send pod, which is going to take the output of the REST message and then send it to a file system. So with this one configuration set, all other demos will follow the same path, so we won't need to do that again. So I'll go to see locations, stock 2013 demo, and then out. And finally, you have to wire the send ports and receive ports. In this case, I'm going to say that whenever I'm dropping a message to receive port 1, use that as a trigger to make the REST API call. So I'm going to set the filter condition as whatever comes from this receive port, go ahead and do it. And the next interesting thing is whenever you get a REST output from the REST API call, which is made through the two-way send port, you want to send it back to a local file system so that you can see the output. So I'm going to say the output of the second send port as bts.sendPortName equals this one. Right. So now we have set it end-to-end. Let's go ahead and start this particular one. All right. So let's actually see it in action. So we have this storage account. BTS demo storage is going to contain, it has two containers. Now we are going to perform an operation through REST, which is going to ask you to list the containers. And the way you can do that is I'll have to pass an input message. So I'll go to the message I created and create a message instance out of it, generate instance. All right, let's go here. This is the output. Let's go back to. So what I'm doing here is opening the input message, and I'm going to specify the different operations. As we go along, from now in the next 5 minutes, we are going to incrementally add more operations like list containers, get blobs, etc. So in this case, I'm going to say list containers. The remaining stuff doesn't matter. So if you see here, the list containers is the same name which we provided in the Bistock configuration. So you're going to tell Bistock when you're making a REST API call, which is the operation which I have defined that you want to invoke. And that is list containers, the one which I defined here. So with this said, let's actually see it side by side. So what I'll do is, wrong space. Looks good. All right. So now let's go and see. Hopefully the demo works. So I'm going to see it side by side so that you can show you can see the message invocation and the output. So I'm going to go ahead and say, go to locations, demo, out. This is where we're expecting the output. Copy the file here. And let's see if it gets a note. And typically, the first time, it always goes to some error. Let's see if it is. I might have missed something basic. I know. It's So it might say that BTS Decade Demo Storage. Okay, let's go ahead. So there are a few reasons why it could have failed. Let's switch back to a backup thing which I have, which does the exact same thing. And see if this HTTPS dot. So here I'm going to do the same thing, list the containers and do a bunch of stuff. So what I'll do is, this one? Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. Thank you. That makes sense. Let's try that one more time. And this is out where you expect it to get the data. And here we are going to drop a file. It'll still be an error. Okay. So let me switch back to the other version where you're doing the exact same thing in terms of getting the message out. So in this case, I'm going to copy the message here and getting a response back. And this response basically tells you the list of containers which is there in the Azure Blob Storage, right? So we just saw the data, and the we had a second container called name, the call second. Now we want to progress from here incrementally. So what we want to do next is, instead of saying just get the list of containers, we want to be more dynamic, where you want to say get a specific container, and the message you pass is something which you pass at one time. So what I'm going to do is open this particular file in Visual Studio. It's here in the dry run. So here, instead of list containers, I'm going to say get blobs. And the way I define the get blobs parameter is, I'll switch over here so that it becomes more explicit. I'm going to invoke an operation called get blobs, and I'm going to ask you to get the blobs of a particular container, and the URL is the format in which REST API works. Now, instead of specifying the actual container name, I'm providing a placeholder, saying that I'm going to provide that value at runtime. And once you provide this value at runtime, let me go over to the dry run part. Once you provide this value at runtime, the adapter is intelligent enough to say that, hey, you haven't provided the value. And we have a new functionality called variable mapping. And what it does is it goes through the all your configuration and says, list which all placeholders you have set, and asks you to specify how we can provide that value. So in this case, we are going to promote that value from context property. So remember, we promoted the context in Visual Studio to say that, send it to the property schema. So we're going to say, which property schema contains the value and which field in the property schema contains the value. So in this case, we have specified how you can get the container name and blob name. And now what we'll do is go back to the input file and say that now get the blobs in the particular container. In this case, the container in which I want to get the blobs is named as second. Now let's go back and do a side-by-side thing. So I'm going to drop the message again. Let's say, just write on, right. Copy. Maybe it's not get blobs. List blobs, yeah. List blobs, let's do that now. So it came up, right? So we just gave the list blobs. In this case, it's going to say your second blob contains hello1.txt and source.txt. So now the next incremental thing which I want to do is do a get blob operation. Here I want to specify for a particular container, get me the contents of a particular file. So again, instead of hard coding it, we are going to specify the variable mapping. And if you go to the send port, we have copy pasted the same configuration. Let me go back there. And again, the neat thing is, if you see the list containers, list blobs, and get blobs, all use the same placeholders. And you don't have to specify the placeholders every single time. If you see, we have five operations making use of same container and blob, but we specify only two variable mappings because everyone uses the same placeholder. So the next specific thing which you want to do is get the contents of a specific file. So here I'm going to go ahead and say, get the from the list of, okay, here it's get blob. If you go here, it's get blob. I'm going to get the contents of source1.txt from the second container. So I'll go back here and say stmon, stmod. I'm going to copy one more file and did it come up? Oh, maybe, yeah, the hello demo.txt may not be there. Let's go back to second. And here we have hello1.txt. So let's just change the name of the file to hello1.txt. Right, now you got the message. So here if you see, this is the contents of that hello1.txt. It's an XML file, I just renamed it as txt. Now we saw how we perform get operations dynamically, right? Where you get the specific files on a container, but you're providing the values at runtime. But it's not only about getting the data, you also want to create files. So in this case, how can you actually create a new file in Azure Storage? So we're going to create a new operation called create blob, and instead of using the get operation, I'm going to perform the put operation. And the one thing to note is that when you're creating a new file, you want the message body. You don't want to truncate the message body. So if you see here, we're not specifying put, which means that when you're making the REST API call, we're actually sending the payload. So with this said, let's go ahead and say I want to create a new file called hello from tech.txt, and it's going to contain this particular value. Yeah, I keep forgetting that. So it is create blob. Let me copy paste just to make sure I don't. Right? You're creating a blob. And let's go ahead and send this message. So the message got created. To make sure that the file really did get created, let's go to the container again. And here you see hello from TechEd. And the final thing we want to do is we want to delete the file. So we want to do a delete operation. So we'll go back to the demo VM and see that we will add one more operation called delete blob. And here we're going to make use of the delete method. And the base address is similar to the put. So I'm just going to copy delete blob from here and go and change my input message so that I'm going to delete the file which I just created. So you can do that. Copy here. So sure enough, it came back. And let's go back and verify that it actually got deleted in the Azure Storage account. Now, what we hopefully saw now is you have the new REST adapter in BizTalk Server 2013 in which you can make calls dynamically. And if you have to invoke the messages, invoke the REST APIs based on your business context, you would be able to do so using the new variable mapping functionality. And on top of it, the way it gets rich is that on the same endpoint, you can perform multiple operations, and you dictate which operation gets to get invoked. So the second part of the demo which I'll use for REST, it's not only about exposing REST services, like consuming REST services, but it's also about exposing REST services. So how do you go about exposing this particular thing? Now, in the same context, let's do a quick experimentation, right, where you have consumed to Azure storage, but most likely your source systems, which are integrating through BizTalk, would know nothing about Azure storage. They just want to make access to a REST API call. You, in turn, make access to the Azure storage. That way, your solution is delineated, so you don't have a direct knowledge about the target systems. So what we can do is you go to BizTalk and go to BizTalk WCF Publishing Wizard. Here you go. One of the first things you'll notice is that you can now expose a REST endpoint, which makes it the WCF Web HTTP adapter. So you can select this and say that I want to create a receive location in BizTalk 2013 demo. And then in this case, I don't want to expose it to the cloud. We will soon see an end-to-end scenario in which you can expose REST services to the cloud and make use of it in Windows 8 app. And I'm going to create a one-way receive because I'm just going to send the data to it. And what is the name of the endpoint which I want to use. So far, it's a pretty generic one. The neat thing is that now we are able to expose via WCF Web HTTP. I've done this, and if you go to the IIS console, I had exposed a REST service called, let me go back here, BTS 2013 dry run. And what it is it's a REST endpoint through which you can invoke, and your BizTalk process can dictate what happens when you make those operations. So what I've done next is if you go to the receive locations, this is a receive port which got created, and as you see, it's 2013 dry run service 1.svc. It makes use of the new REST adapter. And the neat thing about this is once you go to configuration, you now define what your REST protocols are. For example, in service 1.svc / get containers, what is the parameters you want to pass? / get blob, what is the parameter you have to pass? So let's see it in side by side, what is the value we are given. Let's go back to the notepad and paste it. See here is the exact same thing. So what we have done right now is we have exposed a REST service, and as part of exposing the REST service, you're saying that I'm going to allow get operations using these relative URIs. I'm going to allow put operation using these relative URIs. I'm going to perform delete operations. Now, the easiest way to see it in action is to actually send it via Fiddler. And before we send it via Fiddler, you'll see that there's a variable mapping here as well. The difference between what we did in the send part and what we did in the receive part is very minute. In the send part, based on your message, you're going to populate the values from property context. In the receive part, based on the URL which you're hitting, for example, if I hit URL / container / blob name, from that URL, I'm going to promote the context. So that is the difference. So you don't need a property, you don't need a XML file. So in this case, what we'll do is I have Fiddler running, and the endpoint is here. This is a REST endpoint which is exposed. So I'll go to Fiddler. Go to the local endpoint. Maybe it didn't get copied. Let's go here. Okay, got copied. And now you have to specify what is the relative address you want to invoke. Let me first do it in the same order in which we did earlier. First, I'm going to say, get me the list of containers. So I'm going to go ahead and go to Fiddler and specify this. Sure enough, I think the service is running. Oh, it's a delete operation. Sorry, I have to do a get. Right. So now it's able to go ahead and post to this endpoint. And sure enough, if you go to the output folder, let's go here. There's a new file which came at 350, and this is going to list your list of containers. Now, what we have did is this is not directly talking to Azure Storage, right? You expose a REST service for your LOB applications, And that REST service, in turn, talks to the Azure Storage endpoint. So this gives you a clear delineation. And for example, let's say you want to create a new file using this. Let's go back to Fiddler. And again, you're not talking to Azure Storage. You're talking to your local host service endpoint. I'll go ahead and say, let's delete this particular value. Now I want to say, let's go here. For create blob, it's going to be slash container slash blob. And the container name, as we saw in the previous demo, is second. And now I'm going to say live.txt. And this is the file I'm going to create. And here, I'm going to do a put operation because I'm going to create a new file. I'm going to say live. Now, what it will do is you're going to make a local REST API call, and it goes ahead and creates the file in Azure Storage. It is successful here. Let's switch over to Azure Storage. And sure enough, the file is created, live.txt. Now, what happens behind the scenes? Let's take a moment to understand what happens behind the scenes. Here you have the Bistock receive location. And it's already open here, sorry. And as part of the receive location, you're saying that I'm allowing a specific set of operations. And if you're doing a put method with the parameters as slash container slash blob, it automatically knows that you're doing a put create blob operation because your URL matches. And once the URL matches, then the second option is you're not passing container placeholder, blob placeholder. Based on the placeholders, it automatically takes the data from the URL and then promotes it into the property namespace, which we got created. So that way, when it comes to the receive port, after the receive port is complete, your property is already promoted based on the URL. And once it is done, we are using the send port, which we saw in the previous demos, to go ahead and call the REST API call, and that in turn invokes. And this is really powerful because what we saw right now, both on the send side and in the receive side, you're able to make invocations dynamically, and you can expose REST APIs as well as invoke REST APIs. And it's completely driven by your business decisions. We'll just take a quick look at a complete end-to-end solution. Now, what we have seen so far is I talked about Azure Storage, talked about how it works, talked about the different operations, et cetera. But to make a real-life scenario, what we are going to do is we are going to have an orders table on-premise, a SQL orders table, and that we expose as a REST endpoint in the cloud. Now, once you expose it as a REST endpoint in the cloud, it's now accessible to all various form factors, like Windows 8 apps, Windows mobile apps, et cetera. We're just going to see how we are using a Windows 8 application to get the data, which is there on-premise, using the REST adapter. So can we just switch over to the... So while Guru is spinning that up, I'll just show you the backend. So this is the backend table in my VM, which you're going to expose as a REST endpoint. We follow the same process going through the WCF publishing wizard to expose this as a REST endpoint. I'll go back to the Bistock administration console just to show that we have it in place. We go to the SQL equipment, go to receive location, and here we expose it as a receive endpoint. The only difference between what I did earlier and what we did now is when we publish the REST endpoint, we also said that publish it as a service bus endpoint as well, so that it's accessible to the cloud. So if you go to Bistock, let me just talk about this. Select this, select Web HTTP. Here you can select add as a service bus endpoint. If you do this, then it will ask you the credentials in terms of which service bus endpoint you want to connect, and now your REST endpoint is accessible anywhere securely. Right. We just did that for the LOB operation, in this case a SQL operation, and it's hosted locally in IIS.
So what we also have here is not just an LOB endpoint. There is an orchestration, Bistock orchestration, which is taking that LOB endpoint and exposing itself as a business process. So it's a pretty powerful scenario if you look at it. I can take any LOB endpoint, be it SAP or SQL or Oracle or any of the LOB endpoints, and add a business process in front of it, and add some business rules to it, and create my own RESTful endpoints which can be accessed from many devices from anywhere, be it applications on one end or be it devices on the other end. So it's not just about exposing raw LOB endpoints. You can expose schemas, you can expose orchestrations, and all of them show as simple RESTful endpoints. So the scenario that we'll be covering here is, even though this is a SQL endpoint behind the scene, we'll be showing it from a Windows 8 application. Oh, geez, what? 4, right?
2, I guess.
8.
Yeah, put 6.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a simple Windows 8 app which lists from that same SQL table. So here I have a filter which says my demo, which I'm going to change it to
track. Track.
So this is a list of equipments coming from the back end. So it's actually hitting the REST endpoint, which is talking to an orchestration behind the scene, which goes and fetches the data from the backend LOB system. The backend LOB system could be anything. It's for simplicity's sake, we are using SQL Server, but it could be anything. So now if we go and add a new entry in the backend, so now it should reflect back here.
So I'll just quickly go to the backend, and I think it's coming up. So 7. Yep. So this is the backend table where you saw the inventory data, equipment list data. So I'll go ahead and say, just add a new entry. Right. Let me say it as demo.
Just demo.
Yeah. 0030, keep a part number, and then save it. Now we have added the data real time, but let's switch over to the Windows 8 app and see if we can access that demo list which we just created. Sure enough, we are able to see it here. And this is happening real time, just to show that you're actually exposing your on-premise data securely as a REST endpoint, and you now enable new experiences like the Windows 8 app, which we just showed.
So this is running from multiple devices, actually. I have a Windows 8 app that is accessing a cloud-hosted IaaS machine, which is being accessed through Service Bus. So you can connect from any device to any type of processes accessing any type of LOB systems. And going for, this was a pretty quick demo of a very powerful process. So now we will be talking about some of the performance improvements that have, let's move back to 1, right?
7.
Okay. Let's look at some of the performance improvements that are done in BizTalk Server 2013. So this shows about the various improvements that have happened on the server. So we are focusing on some of the pillars here, which is about cloud connectivity, improved performance, and simplified experience. We saw one of the ways of connecting to the cloud, which was using the REST adapter. Now we will be focusing on the performance side of it. So the performance improvements that have that have been implemented on the server are mostly around MLLP adapters and Dynamics endpoints. And there is a new functionality called XSLT Compile Transform, which is applicable to almost all the all of your BizTalk applications, which uses any type of maps. So this is an improvement that came from the .NET framework itself. So wherein the map performance improvement we are seeing almost in times of 20x magnitude. So what we currently have is a BizTalk performance lab that is running. It's a lab that is being hosted in Charlotte. So the lab is being handled by some of our premier field engineers and support teams. So we will be connecting to that lab to see the live performance of this test.
So in this demo, what we're going to do is, as Guru said, we have a lab environment, which is like what we use for performance runs. And it's like state-of-the-art systems. And we have BizTalk 2010 running in one environment, BizTalk 2013 running in another environment. And as far as the machine characteristics are concerned, they are the same. We have an application which is running in both. We are just going to log into each of the machines and then do a live load for the next 3 minutes, where we are going to pump in data the same rate to both 2010 and 2013 and see what sort of improvements, like what sort of output we are going to see. So while Guru brings that up, I'll just briefly talk about what all changes we have done in BizTalk Server 2013 for Perf. The very first thing is around the notion of a mapping engine, like how you make use of XSL compile transform. So typically, in most cases, you do messaging in BizTalk. You inevitably use maps. And just by making use of the new APIs, you will see a new a lot of improvements in your messaging scenarios. And the other places where we have improved around performance is around auto send port delivery, where it doesn't work quite the same as in 2010. You will see a lot more faster execution of auto send port. And the best use case for this particular one is for HLC healthcare scenarios, where you typically make use of ordered send ports in the execution. So with this, let's actually see that live load. Are you connected to the machines?
Yeah, I'm connecting. Right. So you can talk about that environment we have.
All right. So this environment, so what we're going to do is we're going to publish all this data pretty soon as a white paper. And we're going to show with respect to the live lab, which is that today. And this is not like, as for the other demos, we did it in IIS VM. And it's not a VM. It's not some machine which is running in like a desktop box, et cetera. These are actually machines in the lab environments. And we have a specific topology. And this topology, we do run across, let's say, two message box instances, three message box instances. And we have a wide permutations about it. And this is a quick peek in terms of some of the results which you've seen so far. And as you can see in the slide, you have data across BizTalk Server 2013, BizTalk Server 2010, and BizTalk Server 2009. And these are like messaging-only scenarios or data with orchestrations or without orchestrations, et cetera. And as you see, the general theme of this whole thing is from 2009 to 2010, there were some improvements. And from 2010 to 2013, you will see a lot of improvements. And this is just a really quick peek in terms of like what sort of messaging throughput you get. But we are going to publish a really, really exhaustive white paper pretty soon, which is going to contain everything you need to know about perf considerations, perf optimizations. So let's switch back. I think you're connected to the machine 8. Okay, let's see.
Okay, so what we are doing now is a live test that shows a comparison between BizTalk 2010 and 2013. Let's run this test. Right click and say run test. This simulates a load of a pretty complex map. We'll show that map, which is taking from SAP IDOC and converting it to a EDA 810, which uses a lot of looping functor structures and constructs and scripting constructs. So now as the as it primes, it will show up that graph wherein you will see the number of messages being posted by the test harness. So here we are posting equal number of messages to both BizTalk 2010 and 2013. So we have four servers, two BizTalk servers running 2013 and two BizTalk servers running 2010. And we have the test harness that is just posting one message at a time to each of these servers. So both 2010 and 2013 will be getting equal number of messages. And as the graph loads up, it takes about 40 to 60 seconds just to build up that graph.
Yeah, it's coming up.
So as it loads up, you can see the number of messages being processed and the total number of CPU that it takes, or the amount of CPU that it takes, and the total depth of the spool as it processes. So when you see this, the blue line that is picking up on the right side, that is 2010 environment. The one on the left side is the 2013 environment. So you see that the CPU is spiking up pretty high on 2013.
On 2010.
So you will see that it hits almost as high as 95% for processing a similar load. So the which also gives me, like if I change the parameter, instead of passing equal number of messages to 2010 and 2013 at the same time, I can actually process more messages on 2010 if I were to give that load. So the performance improvement that we see here, it's almost like 150 messages more per second. So on 2010, I was processing close to 320 messages per second on an average. On 2013, it comes to around 460 messages per second. This is on an exactly identical hardware. It's the same exact application. It's the same test harness. Only difference is we moved from 2010 to 2013. So the biggest improvement is coming from that XSL compile transform, which is one of the many improvements that happened in BizTalk 2013. So this is a 3-minute run that shows in real time how this performance improvement is reflecting. So we can also show some of these previous runs that were run. So here I see this where it is flattening at consistently at about 60%, and this guy is going to 90% consistently.
Right. So and again, just to wrap up the performance thing, what you saw right now is one key example of a really complex but also common scenario where you take from IDOC to EDI. But that's pure messaging. There are other scenarios where you do messaging, where you do processing in terms of orchestrations, where you do different hosts, et cetera. There's a whole set of considerations when it comes to optimizing your BizTalk environment. And similar to what we did for BizTalk Server 2010, in terms of publishing a guide.
So this is a lab that is in real time. So that's why the data that you see is, we just captured the data like 15 minutes before this session.
Yeah.
So this is so it's not even formatted. So this is live data, and we will be publishing this, and thanks to many of the teams that is contributing to this. This lab was created by our Premier Labs, which is open to customers. So if we have customers who want to validate a specific scenario, Microsoft provides this Premier Labs environment of any type of hardware, any type of configuration that you can use there. And we have some highly skilled performance fine-tuning engineers who can fine-tune an environment, given an environment for a given application scenario. So let's move forward real quick on this. And the next scenario that we will be talking about is other additional performance improvements, which is specific to dynamic sendports. Dynamic sendports has been a part of BizTalk Server for a long, long time. Ever since 2004, we have had that. In case of dynamic sendports, the runtime figures out where am I sending this message based on a property within the message, just within the URL. So the limitation that we had in the previous versions of BizTalk was if I had a message that is going into FTP and the next message says I'm going to HTTP and the third message says I'm going to file, all of them were going through the same host instance. So I could not scale based on the type of adapter, like if we had scaled out on HTTP or if we had scaled out on FTP on different host instances, it could not change, select a different handler based on the type of adapter. So in 2013, we have made that ability for you to switch different adapters, different host instances, and dynamic adapter, dynamic send handler will take advantage of that. And we will talk about that in the context of ESB.
Right.
And with relation to that, I invite our guest speaker, Eric Stott. He runs a company called Start Creations, wherein they will be showing how they have leveraged BizTalk's ESB platform and created a custom portal which shows more insight into how BizTalk data is being processed within the context of an ESB. Go ahead, Eric.
All right. Can you hear me? All right. So we have... We've had a few customers that implemented the ESB, and we've been sold on it for a while, but there were some holes that we felt were missing. So we implemented a portal on top of the ESB and added some components to the ESB. As part of BizTalk 2013, when it when you install it, it comes delivered a different way. Prior, you had the ESB guidance, and then you had the ESB toolkit that you had to go find on MSDN somewhere on the download site. Now it comes as part of the install, so you get As part of, you know, when you go to set up BizTalk, there's another step in your setup process, and it installs BizTalk or installs the ESB. It also installs your application as part of the installation. So wanted to point out that that's a new feature, less hassle of a feature for the ESB. What we've done is add some new features to the Enterprise Service Bus. The first and foremost is some extensions into the Itinerary Flow Designer. I've got one that's set up here. We implemented the ESB at a large health plan, and as soon as we started showing them, the first thing they complained about was, I could care less about the itinerary GUID. Or the start and end time, because if I don't have the patient name, the patient ID number, or et cetera, these GUIDs or timestamps don't mean anything to us. So what we've done is added a new service extension to the Itinerary Flow Designer. It's called the Logging Service Extension, and this will log information into BAM. I've created one, a couple of them already, so not only have we created the Logging Service Extension, but in here we've created a new resolver. The new resolver allows us to define what kind of data we want to capture. I'll add a new one so we can see what it looks like. And it gives us BAM data, BAM data types. So I can say a varchar, and then I can specify the type of extraction I want. I can go against the business rule engine, so I can have multiple data types running through the same flow, and use the business rule engine to determine how I extract the data. I can get the context. If I want to get the file name, I want to extract some of the message context. When I choose that, I press the down arrow button, and it will give me every context property that's in the message box or in the management database. Lastly, I can simply specify an XPath statement. And the last part of what we've done as part of the extensions of the Itinerary Flow Designer is we've created separate extractors. We've got the database extractor with BAM and the file XML itinerary. With the XML itinerary, it will read through the itinerary and create a BAM activity, so you can promote your BAM activity up. If I go export model, not only do I get the itinerary here, but I also get the BAM activity so I can deploy it. So it'll proactively read through and determine what I'm logging, and it will create that activity. Probably the best part about it is there's a portal that runs on top of the ESB. So your current implementation of the ESB, you can plug this in and see data as it flows through. My personal laptop doesn't have SharePoint, so I've got another machine, and we've got the process designed or the process replicated on this machine. And what it does is it has a grid that shows data in real time, and I will drop a new member off. Oh, come on. Yeah, it does. It's not replicated on mine. Sorry. So I'm having to strain my eyes. And we're all using, and this thing runs in our favorite browser. You guys notice what that browser is? It runs in Chrome, Safari, Firefox, and Internet Explorer. At least that's what we've tested it with thus far. Notice I didn't press refresh on this. I can go in and look at the details. And my itinerary gets serialized into these steps. I've got some delays in these services so we can actually see it run without it just magically turning green. And that looks okay. The problem is everyone's BizTalk implementation right out of the gate always runs perfectly, right? You never had any problems, right? Am I the only one that's ever had a problem with a BizTalk implementation? These guys had one problem today, and they didn't know how to solve it because they run perfectly. So we'll submit a bad member and see what it looks like. And this will be interesting because most demos are supposed to run perfectly, right? And not break. Well, I'm trying to break this one. So here it comes in. It's orange. It's in flight. Let me go back. Notice that this turned red. So I want to go find out what's going on with this. I can tell which step it failed on, and I see the fault. I can click on this fault, and I can find out, well, this is where it was going. I can go down and I can read. This uses a generic friendly XML editor so that regardless of the fault that I get back, it shows it in something that's a little more readable. And this says that the trading partner number 10 was less than 100. So I can go back and I can change this to 107. I can go through and change other values if I want. And notice I can tell which values I've changed. I also can click on that raw XML and make changes. Most business analysts, they look at XML and they're like, I don't know what this code is. It's like, it's not code, it's data. But if I need to add new nodes, et cetera, I can through the raw XML viewer. I'm going to save this and resubmit it. And this uses App Fabric in the back end, so it's highly available, responds quickly. And you'll notice that my name is attached to this message so that there's auditing capabilities. It's going through the next step, and it then fails. So I can go here and click on the fault. Go determine what it is. And it says that HV is not a state. So I can scroll down and change the state. Notice up here, I cannot resubmit it at this step. This is my new problem. To save time, I can resubmit it. There's two different types of errors. One's for business analysts. There's one for operations, so that you can expose errors just to the operations team. You can expose different errors to the business team, so they are only aware of the problems that they can solve. If we want to flip back to the slides, I've got some information at the end, but yep, I'm done.
All right. Thank you, Eric. So this was a quick demo of an extensibility that an external partner can do based on the functionality that is already provided on the platform. So ESB is one such thing. The other one that we wanted to show is about connectivity to Office 365 using the native SharePoint adapter that is built into BizTalk. This is a quick demo of connecting to any SharePoint endpoint, and in this case, we chose Office 365 as a SharePoint endpoint. So The SharePoint adapter has been part of BizTalk for a long time. And in this case, the improvement that was done came from many of customer feedback who are using SharePoint 2010. So the way that it started out was, if I have to install SharePoint adapter on a SharePoint form, you had to actually install it on every one of those members of the form. So it was not possible for them to manage it or update it or do something like that. So that was the feedback. So the way we addressed that was like we took the SharePoint client library and said, okay, you know what? Instead of updating every one of those SharePoint server forms, we'll just update the client, which in this case happens to be BizTalk server, and it can talk to any type of server, be it SharePoint hosted on-prem, be it SharePoint hosted anywhere. So you don't have to install anything on the server side of it. So that's how we are able to connect both to SharePoint on-prem or SharePoint hosted or SharePoint online. So now we will be posting a message to SharePoint online.
So what you see here is a SharePoint site in Office 365. As you can see, it's in the cloud, afbtb1.sharepoint.com. And what we'll quickly do is go through the configuration required in BizTalk server to actually enable connectivity to Office 365. In the interest of time, we already set up a send port and quickly walk through the configuration required. We are making use of the Windows SharePoint Services adapter, which is the same as 2010. There's no difference there. However, what is new in 2013 is that we have new properties if you look into the adapter configuration pane. The two things which I would say are just interesting and new is that first we make use of the client object model, which gives you the ability to directly connect to Office 365. You no longer have a dependency to actually go out and say, hey, where is the adapter service and how do you connect to it? And the second thing which is interesting is when you're connecting to Office 365, you're connecting with a different username and password. You're not logging with your SSO credentials, right, in your on-premise. So you have the ability to specify your username and password. So that is the only configuration done. You don't need an adapter service as was required earlier. You can just directly connect to Office 365. In this case, what I'm going to do is I have a receive location which is already wired up. I'm going to take a simple message and drop it here so that we can get it reflected in the SharePoint site. So let me go ahead and quickly refresh this. And now you see the data is here a few seconds ago, which just came in. And all that is required is just a send port configuration. And you can build your own business process which can plug into the new SharePoint adapter and enables the collaboration needs of your application. So then while we are here, what I'll also quickly talk about is in terms of the dependency tracker. And one new thing when it comes to 2013 is when you open the pane, you see a lower pane called dependency statistics, which talks about two different models of relationships. One is a used by and one is users. So we'll actually see a specific thing in action. Let's go to a pipeline which might exist already. So in this case, let's see a pass-through pipeline. And pass through receive, okay. And then say view dependencies. Now it shows a couple of things. First, it says that this pipeline is used by these many send ports and receive ports. Now in 2010, you'd be able to easily tell a different kind of behavior, which is, I have my send port, what is the pipeline associated with it? I have my application, what are the schemas associated with it? Now, if you want to answer the reverse question, which is, I have a pipeline, what are the ports associated with it? Now, this might be interesting to you because you are updating a pipeline version and you want to know which all assemblies get impacted before you want to make the change. And that is really difficult, used to be difficult. And what we have done is we heard that feedback and made sure that we are able to expose the statistics which is relevant to you. Now, if you want to go back and see which all send ports are using this particular pipeline, you can go ahead and say send ports. And then from there, you can see its dependencies and see that this endpoint makes use of two pipelines. And then go back there and then see that in action. And then you can go to its dependencies and so on and so forth. So you can keep tracking the dependencies as long as you want. And this could be useful in scenarios where you want to update your schemas, you want to update your maps, or you want to find what are the different places your system you need to consider. So this is a really rich experience, and it covers all our data types so far. And the final thing which I would show before I go to the service bus implementation is to talk about the Dynamics endpoint changes which Guru talked about earlier. If you now create a new Dynamics endpoint, and you'll see a new thing called SYN handler configuration. And what it shows is that when you're sending data dynamically, you want to specify which host you want to use for different adapters. For example, when you're sending file, you want to use host A, whereas if you're sending a message via SMTP, you're sending email, you might be having a different host to send emails. So you can now specify that using this. In this case, I have a single host instance, host, but if you have multiple hosts, you can dictate now how your which host you use. And this is especially useful in the context of ESB, because ESB itineraries inherently use Dynamics endpoints. And finally, we'll switch back to the service bus demo. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. So what happened to my mic?
Okay.
I lost my mic. Yeah. Okay. So we have 4 more minutes, and we have 3 more demos. We can choose to go through the demos, or if you think that it's overwhelming, all of these videos and demos will be available, made available as our blog post, and we'll be publishing videos of that. If you have questions, we can go through a Q&A for a quick 5 minutes, or I can go through a service bus demo. Either way is fine. Q&A. Okay. So I'm sorry for this express speed. There's a lot of things that happened in BizTalk 2013, and we wanted to cover as much as possible. And ever since we launched this product, for the past 1 year, we have been having, so far we have had 14 roadshows. And in each of them, we have been trying to show different parts of this product. And this is the first time that we are showing a live edition of how to do something. So far, it was all about what is this, what are these improvements, why these improvements. And this is the first time we are showing a live of how to do those things. And that's the reason why it took a while. And in 90 minutes, we have been able to cover just about one little part of this talk. And those are that's the voluminous changes that has happened in this product and improvements that have been made here. And I'm glad that we are able to show you a live of the performance tests. So any questions that you may have? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of scenarios where BizTalk 2013 is being or could be used as a mission critical high performance message bus for OLTP applications?
It is being used. It is being used especially in healthcare spaces. And largest of the largest hospitals in the US are using BizTalk 2013. They are moving from 2010 to 2013 specifically for performance. And one of the performance improvement that is specific to the healthcare industry is around order delivery. Because in healthcare, every message that comes in is through a HL7 message, and they all are order delivery by nature. And in 2013, we took a couple of engine changes and changes specific to MLLP adapter, which resulted in about 7x performance improvement. And so on a similar hardware, on a similar application, if I could process 100 messages, now I can process 700 messages. That independent of the other improvements on the server itself. So case in point was the Health Corporation of America, Hospital Corporation of America. So earlier they could process 1.8 million messages. Now they're processing around 4 million messages, and they're planning to go up to 7 million messages per day. These on 2013 platform.
These are real-time OLTP applications?
These OLTP applications, these hospital applications, real-time as in life and death situations. And so those are significant improvements. And we are competing head-on with many of the industry-leading platforms. And many of our partners are going out there building applications, especially moving from non-Microsoft platforms to Microsoft platforms for these mission-critical scenarios because of these improvements. Great question. Anything else? Yes, please. HIS 2013, we could not make it in time for during BizTalk release, but HIS 2013 has made some significant updates, especially with introducing new adapters. If I'm right, they signed off on RTM 2 weeks ago, and they should be going live in about a month and a half after some media validation.
What about 360?
360? BizTalk 360 is a partner solution. It is not a Microsoft solution. Partner solution who has created exclusively for monitoring and administration. And it is compatible with 2013. And in fact, they also have a hosted version of it on Azure, which can monitor server instances running either on IIS or on prem. So it is compatible for both 2010 and 2013. And they're one of our early adopters for as a TAP program customer. Anything else?
All right, we are good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for running this session.
We will be available for the rest of the term. Thank you. And look forward to continuous update from BizTalk Server Team Blog. We'll be posting videos and demos and downloadables, which you can start to use.
Sure.
Cool. Thank you.